This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world. Occasionally.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Paul and Michael occasionally save the world. Last week, I had a special guest on this podcast. I interviewed the inimitable Ragnar Robots. Rafer Roberts joined me. That was a lot of fun to do. I'm really excited about his book, Grumble, you heard us talk about. And you really love modern fantasy. I read it. I like it okay, but it's also a good deal lost on me. But that was a lot of fun to do.
I was a bit jealous of you because y'all had a lot of fun. I don't think I've ever heard an interview that had so much laughter in it. Y'all were having a lot of fun, especially at the end.
Yeah, he's a good. I think we were both we were both very tired by then. That's for sure.
Well, yeah.
He's a good guy. We interviewed him one time on VCP quite a while ago. But with VCP, it was always basically Martin doing the interview because I've always felt that having two people try to do an interview doesn't really work because you're just like fighting over each other.
Yeah.
It works okay if you're like taking turns and you plan it out, but yeah, I mean, we kind of planned out what we wanted to ask, but you know, it's like we never structured stuff that much. It just kind of flowed. So
yeah.
It was kind of nice to do my first proper interview. And I actually have next week, I have set up, we haven't had it set up a time yet, just kind of tentatively, but I have set up to hook up with J.K. Woodward, another comic creator, great artist, working on many Star Trek and Doctor Who books over the years. So with it, already two guests on the podcast. Who knows what'll flow from here? But it was a lot of fun talking to Rafer. Really enjoyed his book. Mike Norton's one of my favorite artists, as you heard me talk about on the podcast. And everybody else hopefully has heard me talk about it too. Hopefully they didn't skip the one that didn't include you. Hopefully I'm enough of a draw, you know, with a special guest to get people to listen. But
I'm sure
you never know.
Yeah.
I know you want to ask me some stuff or have some discussion points coming off of that. But before we get to that, right before we were doing this, I was watching an episode of Young Sheldon with my wife, and you were asking me some questions. I said, stop, cut it. Let's just start recording the podcast. So go ahead, pick up where we left off. What were you asking me about Young Sheldon?
That's one of those shows that we watch, my wife and I. My oldest daughter doesn't like it. She likes to watch the actual Big Bang Theory, but she doesn't care about that show for some reason. And it's one of those shows we're just kind of behind on. It's like we save it for when we have nothing else pressing that we want to watch, and then we go to it, and you know, we enjoy it. And I informed you via messaging before we got started recording that the mom that plays the mom of Sheldon on the Young Sheldon show is actually the daughter of Laurie Metcalf, the lady that plays the mother on the Big Bang Theory to Sheldon. And you know, yeah, when we started watching that show, and it's like, God, when we started watching Young Sheldon, it's like, God, she really does look a lot like the lady that plays the mother on the actual show. And it's just really weird when I found out, because I was listening to an interview with Laurie Metcalf, who's kind of an interesting person herself, that it actually was the daughter. That's why there's such a resemblance. So strange.
Yeah, her mannerisms are real good with it. Laurie Metcalf has always had some real distinct characteristics. You know, she was Jackie on Roseanne, and then being Sheldon's mom on Big Bang Theory, her mannerisms are hers. Like, you can see them between the two vastly different characters. So it's definitely interesting seeing somebody playing the same character that she played in Big Bang Theory, but younger, and having such similar mannerisms. It makes sense, it being her daughter, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Growing up around somebody, you get pretty good at mimicking their mannerisms, I guess. But yeah, so we actually just started watching that. Just the other day, my wife showed me video clips from one of the episodes. It was like kind of a condensed, I guess you'd say, like a synopsis in the form of video clips of one of the episodes. And I was like, well, that seems pretty good. We liked The Big Bang Theory. We watched it for a long time. What we would do, because, you know, CBS isn't on streaming anything. You can't watch on Netflix, can't watch on Hulu. I guess you could watch on their own streaming service, but screw that.
Yeah.
So we used to buy the DVDs of Big Bang Theory, like on Black Friday sales or something like that. We finally got to the point where we just weren't enjoying it as much, so we stopped buying the new ones. I'm sure at some point the series is wrapping up soon, so it wouldn't surprise me if the series wraps up. They release it as a whole box set,
yeah.
And eventually like we get the whole series for like $25 on a Black Friday sale. Black Friday is the best way to get TV.
Yeah. Yeah. That series, it's the next season is the last season. And, you know, to me, we watched all of them. I kind of think they probably could have ended a season or two ago, and it would have been fine, because, I don't know, it just seems like it's not to the point where it's completely jumped the shark, but, I mean, everybody's got kids, and the whole original dynamic is kind of gone. The only one that's not married is Raj, so we'll see what happens. I'm sure he's going to be the
one. Out of loop, I didn't know any of them were married. I haven't kept up with anything. So.
Oh, yeah, you're behind a lot. Spoilers, I should have warned you.
Yeah, I think we're probably a few years behind. But yeah, so Young Sheldon, we actually have been watching it. If you go to just CBS.com, you can watch. They have 5 episodes available on there. I'm actually kind of impressed that it's so easy to just go to a TV channel's website and watch their best shows. It's kind of interesting. I mean, they do run commercials and stuff, so I guess they still make their ad revenue.
Yeah.
But... yeah, it's been fun. It's the kind of show I think that I don't have that urge like, oh man, I gotta watch this, but I'm completely happy watching it when it's on too. So my wife's been more into it than I have been, but I've enjoyed every bit that I've watched with her. I've also slept through some of it, being rather tired the last couple of nights, but it's nice to be able to take a nap during a TV show sometimes.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that's not of consequence. It's not like you're dying to see what happens next. It's just a fun show to watch when it's on.
Yeah, it's like more than anything, it's about enjoying the mannerisms of Sheldon, and like I think it's the kind of show that it's almost like just paying fan service to people who are fans of Sheldon on Big Bang Theory, which I mean is exactly why they were able to spin off and do that. But the episode, I'm assuming it was the first episode that they did this. Maybe I'm wrong, but they had the mom singing Soft Kitty.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, you knew they were going to get to that. So that was my evening before getting started here. So now what do we want to talk about? Did you want to discuss my interview with Rafer some before we move on to
just
other
topics? Just a
little
bit, because I really enjoyed the interview. I think you should definitely do more. And I agree with you the fact that one of the reasons I wasn't on was because I am scared of my internet crapping out at any second. You never know. And two, I do believe that one-on-one dynamic, one, it makes the other person more comfortable because you're just interacting with another person and there's no like people talking over one another trying to get in and talk to them. I think we should do more of those. I don't know. It's really fun listening to him talk about his projects. I'm really excited about his next book, Grumble. And anybody out there that that modern fantasy book hooked me because I do have a kind of a D&D RPG kind of, and you know, fantasy more than so than you. I told you about it before you had even read the first modern fantasy book, and you asked me to describe it, and he pretty much described it how I did to you, except with fewer words and much more succinct. Pretty much, imagine that our world, if our world was based in Lord of the Rings or Dungeons and Dragons or some kind of game like that, but it's in our own actual modern times. So hence the name, which I got a good laugh out of the fact that he said that was just like the working title because he hadn't thought up of a clever title yet, and they just kind of stuck with it. But he had a lot of good stuff. My first topic that I want to bring up is based on the interview. He mentioned some of the books that he loved to read, and the first one that I want to talk about is the book, and I wasn't aware of this. I think I've seen it, heard about it. Maybe it's Stray Bullets by David Lapham, I think is how you say it. And I was like, well, okay, well, it's interesting because he has an interesting sense of humor, right? And, you know, he described his next book, Grumble, as everybody in its thieves and liars. And I get the thieves and liars if he likes stray bullets because it's nothing. It's about nothing but people that are kind of like thieves and liars and just this group of people that are up to no good. And so I was lucky because the first volume of collected volume of that series is available on Comixology Unlimited. So I went and checked it out, and it started back in 1995. He published it on his own, originally with his own, book publisher, El Capitan Books. And like the first original series went 41 issues, and then he's gone like another 28 issues with, it might even be on Image, I think. And it's just, I don't know. There was a something about it. It's like you and I have both read Criminal and other books that had kind of that noir feel. Well, this very much feels like a precursor to those books. It jumps back and forth. It's like short. Each issue is a story based in either the 70s or the 80s, and the characters as you go through it are related in some way. Like some characters will appear in one issue, another issue will have different characters. And really, I really wish I had the physical copies because I had trouble. It's easier to flip back in a actual physical copy to kind of like compare. It's like, well, is this the person that I was reading about earlier on than it is in a digital? And I told you when I was telling you about it on message, that book is intense. Really, really intense. I mean, these people are up to no good. The art style is he draws letters and writes it, and it's just part of it's gets kind of creepy, not to say the least. A couple of issues are like, wow, he's really touching on some really interesting territory, but it's really, really good. I'm happy that Rafer mentioned it, recommended it, and if you're interested in that kind of thing, I say go check it out. And if you have Comixology Unlimited, definitely check it out just to see a taste of it. And his art style is weirdly reminded me of Terry Moore's in a way. Just the way the lines are really clean and the way he draws characters. Not like an exact copy or resemblance to it, but there's just something that reminded me of Moore's art, which I also read the first two volumes of Strangers in Paradise, which I almost dropped it at the first three issues, and it kept me going still. And by the end of the second volume, I'm looking forward to reading more of that book also. It's really compelling, weirdly compelling, I guess I could say. So,
Yeah, the further you get going on Strangers in Paradise, the better it gets. Then it gets like a little too weird, and then it shifts gears, and then you're lost, and then it gets better, and then it's something. It's good. But, yeah, so Stray Bullets also, if you have Hoopla, it looks like all of it is available on Hoopla. I had picked up an Image Humble Bundle at some point years ago that has all 41 of the Image issues of Stray Bullets. Looking at Hoopla, it's a little confusing. It looks like they have different volumes, and it's hard to tell what's what on Hoopla because they don't do the best job of sorting this kind of stuff out, but they have the 41 issues that are published on Image, and it looks like they have three other volumes that must have been published in a different manner because they don't match up with the Image volumes. Issue 1 through 8 and the 9 through 16 of a volume called Sunshine and Roses, and there's another one, issues 1 through 8 of a volume called Killers, and it looks like that's volume 6 of the Image run, but they have it as issues 1 through 8, so it must have been, like, renumbered. I don't know. But a lot of stuff there, so...
Well, the first volume you mentioned is one of the more recent ones he's done, and I can't remember the title of the initial volume that it had something to do with nihilism. And, yeah, it's very... nihilism is appropriate. Very appropriate. And to anybody that likes Star Wars... it has a lot of references to the releases of like Star Wars in 1977 and then Empire Strikes Back in 82. It's an interesting book. And if you don't mind a little creepiness and violence and just a little bit of mayhem, it's definitely something to check out. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Someday I hope to be able to get to read to the next couple of volumes at least to give it more of a try.
I was just going to download them, but then it started doing weird things to the audio recording. So I canceled that. I'll download it later. I think I have the image. I have one of these volumes, I think, on my tablet already. But it looks like I thought these were just overlapping volumes from different Humble Bundles, but I think they actually may be potentially two different volumes. Ah, whatever. I'll download it and find out.
The original collected edition was Innocence of Nihilism, which is the one I read. And then there's Somewhere Out West, Other People, Dark Days, Hijinks, and Daring Do, and Killers was the final one. I guess that's from the original run. And then Sunshine and Roses, there's 28 issues of that.
Okay, so, it looks like they have 16 issues of that on here, and then they have everything else that you just listed. So,
are you familiar with? Have you read anything else by this guy though? Because I'm not familiar. I've heard his name.
He worked for Valiant back in the day.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I think he was a penciler or inker for Valiant. Let me actually pull it up and take a look here. Valiant Comics.
Yeah, I know I knew his name from somewhere.
He worked on WWF Battle Mania number 1, first of all. Magnus Robot Fighter 5 through 8, Harbinger 1 through 13, Shadow Man 1 through 2, and 4 through 5, Riot number 0, and Hardcore number 1.
Yeah, that's probably where that name stuck in my brain is from that, seeing that on the covers.
He was a penciler. That's actually what drew my attention to Straight Bullets is I knew his name from picking up those original Valiant books when I had been reading, you know, the new launch of Valiant for, I don't know, somewhere between a year and 2 years probably at that point. I, you know, there were only so many titles coming out, and I just wanted more, so I started picking up all these old Valiant comics randomly, and I got started with that because the comic shop I used to go to had a quarter bin, and if you got 5 books, they were 20 cents each, 5 for $1, and I got hundreds of Valiant books out of that, so I just started collecting. But so I saw his name over and over on that stuff, and that's how I got familiar with it.
Yeah, I know it's still not officially ended, because it's one of those books that he still, I read a thing where he's like, I still want to, I have some more things that I'm working on with it, but he can't justify not working on other things, basically what it is. I mean, that's his love, is that series, so it's not ended. I mean, he puts it out over the years. I mean, there's 59 issues since 1995. You can see how stretched out it is, but yeah, I guess there may be potential for more of it in the future.
Yeah, I'm looking through a little bit some of the other stuff he did. Worked for DC Comics. He did some work on a Superman annual. He did a couple issues of Dial H in 2012. Marvel Comics, he's done a bit more stuff, including Daredevil versus Punisher, Means and Ends, some Wolverine stuff, other stuff, a little bit of stuff on Vertigo, a couple issues of Fables. An issue of DMZ, just looking at this stuff, this jumps out to me. Dark Horse, which is probably another way that I saw some of his stuff, because I'm a Dark Horse comic fan. He did Predators issues 1 through 4, he wrote those. Some Wildstorm, Avatar, he's done a lot of different stuff between art and writing. So, yeah, so Straight Bullets.
That's Stray Bullets.
Definitely want to check it out, especially whenever you hear somebody. Like, I know Martin and I on VCP had interviewed Eric Heiser, and he mentioned that he was reading a graphic novel called My Favorite Thing is Monsters. Martin bought it while we were talking to him. It's available on Hoopla, so at some point I'll read it that way. It looks quite interesting, but I think it also has to be something that I'm in the right mood for, you know?
Yeah. I've seen that book pop up. It's one of those I hopefully will get to someday. Yeah.
Since you talked about comics, I think I'll talk about comics a little bit. So you've heard of these $5 DC comic books at Walmart, right?
Yep. I've read the Batman one.
You read the Batman
first one, yeah.
I picked up a few of the first one. Originally I picked up Superman and Batman. I was just going to kind of stick to that. I had no real intentions of continuing or anything either. And then one day I just was in the mood, and I picked up Teen Titans, and you know, just the first issue, once again, of all of them. I don't think I'm going to continue with getting them, but
reading this. I've read the Superman issue so far, and that's all I've read so far. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, I was really impressed with how they presented this.
It's pretty nice for $5. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good volume of stuff, so that's good. But the way they do it is you get a piece of a story, a piece of it. There's like four or five different stories in it. And a piece is new, so it's completely new to that. So you're getting some original content that you haven't seen elsewhere. Everything else in it is republished stuff. So, you know, as a comic fan, right off it sound kind of funny, like I have to buy all this crap to get the new stuff, or like I've already read this stuff, or I have it elsewhere, or whatever. Just reading it as somebody reading something, I thought it was great, because there was a variety of stuff. It wasn't all Superman. They had some Green Lantern in there. Mm-hmm. They had some, can't remember what it was called, but it's just stuff I was totally unfamiliar with. They had this one that featured all these characters I had never read before, including Plastic Man, which there's a new Plastic Man series going right now that kind of has my interest piqued a little bit, and reading this actually piqued it more, so I'm kind of considering going and picking up a couple issues of the current Plastic Man series. But so
that looks good. Yeah.
Yeah, I've glanced through a couple of issues. I've seen other people say good things about it. But, like, just the way this is presented is great, because none of it is so long that it gets tedious. Mm-hmm. There's a good variety of stuff, so you're getting exposed to different characters, but it also keeps it interesting. It kind of reminds me, like, as a kid watching TGIF or whatever, you know, 2 hours of shows, so you're getting four shows in a row, and every Friday you watch those 2 hours of shows. So you have these four different stories that you're basically taking all in one block the same way every week, right? Reading these four stories and then, or, you know, watching these four stories, and the next week you do it again, you know? 8 o'clock rolls around, you turn on ABC and you watch TGIF. Some Full House, some Family Matters, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this made me think of, is it's all these different stories, and you get a little bit, and it says, come back next month to continue this story and see this stuff. So it kind of gives you a hint of what's happening next, and you're going to come back, and so you pick up issue number 2, and you get the next pieces of these, like, four or five different stories.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it continues on that way. I think that's fantastic. All the comments I saw on this when it came out, you know, there's a lot of different takes, of course. Like, my comic shop owner thinks it's horrible. Because he doesn't want to have competition from Walmart, which makes sense. You know, people complained about the difficulty finding it, and then people complain about it from collecting standpoints, and then people complain that there's only so much new content. Yeah, just a lot of complaining. I saw some people like it too. But, you know, a lot of the comments were, you know, this isn't going to get new readers. This is, like, people that don't read comics don't care about this. Obviously, I read comics and I care about comics, but let me tell you something. I'm not huge into capes and cowls. I'm not a huge DC reader or a huge Marvel reader. I don't care that much about Superman or Batman. I've read a lot of Batman, but I don't care about reading Tom King's Batman. Like, nothing against him, and that's not a commentary on the quality of the story, because I haven't read enough to really know. I've read some and I enjoyed it fine, but I don't want to just read and read and read and read that stuff, whereas some people do, you know? So for me to pick this up, I've had these three books sitting there since July. Mm-hmm. And I've been like, I spent $15 and like, I don't feel like reading these. I finally said, you know, I need to read these because I want to get them off my desk. And I spent $15 on them, so I need to, you know, make that $15 worth it. And I was quite impressed with the experience, to be completely honest. Quite impressed. I completely see how this is a great way to get people that have marginal interests reading this stuff and wanting to read more. I can think back to, you know, being a kid and getting stuff like Disney Adventures magazine or stuff like that, where you get a lot of different material in there, and, you know, some of it is stories that are done in one shot, some of it is stories that are continuing, you know, some like crossword puzzles or games or whatever, like a variety of stuff. Like, I love the feel of it being a variety of stuff that's going to continue over to the next month. None of it is too much of one thing. It's interesting stuff. Me, as somebody who, I mean, granted, I'm much better versed in Marvel than I am in DC, but to have characters in this that I don't know who the hell they are, but they're feature characters in their books, like I was pretty impressed with the whole presentation. So, aside from the whole marketing, comic shop versus big retailer, like aside from all that stuff, I think this is a pretty cool thing. I have the Batman one and I have the Teen Titans one. I'll read all those. I'm probably not going to get more because, I don't need to. Like I can read that stuff in other ways without spending the money, and I don't want it enough to spend the money. But I was pretty impressed. So if anybody's been waffling about it, check it out. But also, if maybe if you don't have any exposure to some of these characters, or if you want to expose, your kid to them or something like that, or somebody else to them, this is a great way to do it, to introduce a lot of different stuff easily and accessibly.
Yeah. I don't see really it being a big threat because it is reproducing mostly the content from other older stuff. And I agree with you. I mean, I'm not familiar with a lot of the Batman universe other than Batman himself. I mean, I've never read any Nightwing, but in the Batman one I read, there was a Nightwing story that I thought was really, really good. And, maybe I'm not going to follow up with getting more of these issues, but I'm definitely interested someday in maybe checking out some more collected content of the Nightwing stories and stuff like that. And the only problem with it is I do see is location, because if they were to put it like on an end cap of a main, like near the toys or the books, I think they'd probably get even more people interested. Because what's happening now, I think, and two or three different Walmarts I've been in. I go to Walmart mostly because my youngest daughter, it's just for some of the things she needs for her diet, it's just more affordable for us to go there. And I look, and it's always in a really hard place to find. So most people, I'm assuming, which shouldn't assume, that are getting it are probably either seeing it because they're going there to look for Magic the Gathering cards or something else and see it. But if they were actually could put it in like with another section, they probably would get more people even. I think it's a good thing too. The production, I was really wondering what the quality of the actual printed matter would be, and I thought it was really outstanding for $5 to have 100 pages and all that content. It's pretty good, and I'm looking forward to maybe checking out some more in the future. But it's not something I'm going to definitely do all of them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's printed like on newsprint paper, right? I mean, so all these people clamoring for newsprint, maybe you have another thing to support instead of a certain company I don't want to talk about right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's pretty decent. I'm glad you at least enjoyed what you got out of it. I haven't got any more issue copies of it. It's just kind of a thing. I'm like, I really don't need to spend the money on that. I kind of want to, but I'm like, I don't have to. It's not that pressing to me that I keep up with it. But
Yeah, I mean, for me, you and I are in the same boat where we have very limited funds of what we can spend on things like comic books at the moment. And for me, yeah, it's a lot of bang for your buck for $5, but I can't get many. So if I'm getting one of those, I'm sacrificing, at least one other comic book I could be getting. And the few things I'm getting, I'd much rather get, even if it is only 20-ish pages. Speaking of which, I'm going to have some tangents tonight. I got a lot of stuff on my mind tonight.
Heck yeah.
So tomorrow, it's new comic day, and for anybody listening, this will be last week. And a comic called Border Town is coming out on Vertigo.
Border Town.
Yeah. So I found out about this book. Let me pull up a little something about it. Give you a little bit of editing work to do, unless I
I could sing a song. That's what I do when Dave gets distracted and has to look something up. But I'm not going to do that to people. They don't need to hear me. God knows they don't need to hear me sing. You could sing while you look it up.
Oh, but that'll just distract me, and then I'll look up what I'm singing. Here we go. I just want to get a little bit more information on it. So this is, oh, come on, computer. Ongoing Vertigo series by writer Eric M. Esquivel and artist Ramon Villalobos. So Ramon is actually what drew me into this, because he was on the comic book podcast I listened to more than any other one, War Rocket Ajax, and he was super entertaining. Like, aside from anything else, he was super, I never knew what he did. His name, what they do is they always tweet out when they're going to do the interview and ask if you have any questions. So I saw this tweet come up, and I Googled him. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I found was a bunch of images of superheroes drawn as wrestlers in a very, very, like, Latin art style, you know? You should Google his name, Ramon Villalobos, Villalobos, and check out this art that I'm talking about, because I think it's fantastic, and I still can't find out any more about it. I've tweeted him a couple of times about it and have not had a response to those. I'm actually going to do it while we talk, too. Ramon Villalobos. So, like, I saw this, and right off, I was like, this is awesome. I really like it. Like, his art style. Oh, and I mean, four images in on the Google search, and there's an awesome Raphael that he did.
Okay. So
I really dig his art style here. It's something different, and I really, really like it. So that drew me in, and then I listened to the interview when it comes out the next week, and he was just a hoot. Like, he was just hilarious. So I just said, you know what? I like this guy. I'm going to get Border Town. So it comes out tomorrow. I haven't read it yet, but I subscribed to it after listening to him. And once again, we're not getting a lot of comic books. So the fact that I'm subscribing to something like out of the blue like this, but just vaguely knowing what the book is about, I'm interested in it. It's one of those books that has some real life tension in it. It's not just, you know, comic book otherworldly stuff. I'm excited about this book.
I'm going to check that out. Yeah,
I'll talk more about it next time we record, because I will have gotten the first issue and read it. But I like his art style. I like everybody I've seen associated with it so far. So that's a little tangent. I just want to mention that book. So if once you guys are listening to this, it's already out. Came out last week. So yeah, go run out and get it. And if your shop doesn't have it, tell them to reorder it and then subscribe for issue number two.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar. Both names sound familiar to me for some reason, and I have to check and look them up and see why. And I'll definitely give this a look. It's always exciting when you find something new. I mean, pretty much I read the books I pick up are pretty much a small number that are the same ones. Usually Kent Lemire, Remender 1, Seven to Eternity, and the Joshua Williamson book, Birthright. Plus, I'm still picking up the Valiant books. I'm still behind on them because I missed a couple of months on my order. But whenever you come across a book, like, that's kind of what Modern Fantasy was for me. I was like, I picked it up because you were going to be interviewing them. I saw that, and they had a really good deal on Comixology. And it's like, well, this is really exciting. This is, for me, it's like something fresh and new, and it's just really, really, that's part of that hunt. You know, you're looking for something. Yeah, you love the things that you love, but then when you find something new, and for me, Rafer Roberts' humor was all, that same sense of humor that's in Modern Fantasy that a lot of people didn't necessarily like in Valiant, the Valiant fans, I remember hearing a lot about that. it fits perfectly in this book for me. So I'm definitely going to pick up the third and fourth volumes of it, and hopefully for that series, he mentioned on the interview that he was going to, maybe if sales are good enough, he'll get to do some more minis based on it, and I kind of hope he does. So, but yeah, it's just fun finding new titles to read like that.
Yeah, and it can be hard to find too, especially when you are getting books that you like for, you know, there's a variety of reasons why we get the comic books that we do. Like, I'm getting multiple Ninja Turtle books. It's not because they're the greatest books ever written. It's because I love the Ninja Turtles, so I'm going to get them no matter what.
Yeah.
But it starts to take a toll on what you can get. You know, like you're saying, you're still getting all the Valiant books. I'm not getting them. If I was getting all the Valiant books, I couldn't get anything else, and that would still be pushing it for me right now. So, you know, I'm limited to what I can get, but I'm trying to be selective. So, like, I tried a couple issues of a couple different things. I've been getting Venom for a few issues. So I've gone through, like, the first arc of Venom. The new Uncanny X-Men series is going to be starting up soon. So I asked my shop owner to switch me from Venom to that. If I decide that I want to keep up with Venom, I'll pick it up on the fly and, you know, maybe resubscribe. But, you know, proactively, I can only get so many books. I'm just going to plan to switch over and then see what happens.
Quick tangent. because we're talking comic books, and you and I have similar tastes on some things. I mean, some things we both love a lot, and we both have a great love for Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire. Did you see the kind of a teaser tweet that Lemire did at near the end of August? He was did two or three where he's announcing, I'm working on this title with this artist. I'm working on this title with this artist. I have this project with this person. And then it's kind of like kind of hidden in one long tweet at the end. He said, and I'm also working on a book to be released next year with Matt Kent.
Yeah. And of course you're talking about Jeff Lemire in this case.
Yeah, I
saw all those tweets. He kept on tweeting different, you know, I'm doing this with this person. I could finally announce this. And then, you know, stuff like, oh, I really wish I could do a book with this person. And last time I said that it happened. Stuff like that. So he, you know, was dropping a lot of either heavy hints or, you know, just clearly announcing something. But I did see that. He announced that he's going to, well, said something about doing a book with Matt Kent.
That's exciting to me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I know Kent did some art on Sweet Tooth. I know they did the Valiant together, but I, you know, I'm sure there's no information about what they're actually working on for who, or if it's a, kind of like an independent thing. But it's something I'm going to keep my eyes out for because I've always kind of wanted them to do something together, like a full independent project together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just like you said, they've touched on each other's works a little bit, and then of course they did the Valiant together. But even that was structured in a way where it's sort of like they were taking their two parts and putting them together more than, you know, meshing on every detail of it. I still think the Valiant's the best thing that Valiant ever put out. It's my favorite thing, I should say, at least. I also love the artist on it, whose name I'm going to blank on. Because I always do that for some reason. But I really like him. Yeah, you know, it's just like people always will ask questions like, what's your dream creative team? Especially when you're big fans of a, you know, more specific thing, like Valiant fans, obviously. But they'll say, what's your dream team on a book? And I always would joke by saying it was exactly, you know, Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent working on a book together with Paulo Rivera. That's, I don't know why his name always... It's one of those things I can get two of the names, but I can never get all three. But yeah, I always joke like, oh, it'd be great if Jeff Lemire did a book with Matt Kent and Paulo Rivera did the art. You know,
yeah.
Can't get much better than that. All right, so now the tangents are over. We're back from the tangents. We're going to stay focused until the next tangent. So the next thing I want to talk about. So my son just started kindergarten. So we've gone from 3 hours a day in school, 4 days a week, to... He's gone for like 7 hours now. So there's actually enough time that what it was like last year and the year before for that matter is he would go to school. We'd have about 3 hours. So you would go take a deep breath. Okay. Relax for a minute. But then if you're going to make use of the time, you got to get into stuff. So it's one of those things like, okay, what do we want to do? What are we going to do? We got to get going on this, you know? And then before you know it, the time's gone. So whether, you know, we went out to do something, or, you know, whatever. I usually would have 1 day off a week when he was in school, and then 1 weekend day off. My wife obviously was off for all those days. But now that he's gone for 7 hours, boy, is there time. It's fantastic. So
yeah,
one of my goals is to actually get playing video games again and play through at least the video games that I've purchased because, you know, I'm very frugal and patient and have a good ability to get things at a good deal. But like I still want to play these games that I've bought. And the one I'm playing right now is actually one that I bought full price, $60. I traded stuff in. I don't think I spent very much of my own, you know, out-of-pocket money on it. But still, fact of the matter is that I paid $60 and I could have been patient, got it for much less, and instead I let it sit there forever and didn't play it. This is the BioShock Collection. Actually, I did play the first one right when I got it. I started that right off. But then I let it sit there forever, and I didn't play the second one. BioShock and BioShock 2, they got to be, like, in my top 10 games, probably. Like, I'd have to really, like, think it out. At least BioShock 2 is probably in my top 10 games of all time. It might be pretty high up that list. Absolutely love those games. There's a great feel to them. Do you know anything about the BioShock games?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. That's something I know the name in passing, but could you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, so it's
I guess essentially you would call it like a first-person shooter type of game, but it's—I mean, it's not just like a first-person shooter like Call of Duty or something is. But that's kind of the style of gameplay. It's a corridor shooter might be a better example. You know, it's like I never played it, but like the old Wolfenstein games, like you're running around,
Doom.
Doom. You see like your hand sticking out with a weapon, kind of a thing. So it's that type of game. The story is linear, so you're going from point to point playing through the story. You upgrade your character throughout the game, via new weapons, improving your weapons, power-ups. You have options of how you do a lot of those things, although some of them are just linear and you come across them when you come across them. But you have options. So like you could choose to power up the specs on the weapon you like the best, instead of, just having to do it across the board or whatever. Those are aspects, especially in this day and age of my life. Those are aspects that I really appreciate in a game. Being able to play through, not having to sweat, like, am I missing something if I don't go screw around over here for a while? Not having to try to balance development across, like, way too many characteristics or something. I don't, like, some options, great. But I need some limit to it, otherwise it's just not worth the mental energy that it takes,
Yeah.
So right up my alley that way. The gameplay is fun. I like this type of game. It's also, I'm typically not a fan of horror stuff. This is definitely a horror game.
Oh, okay. More
But
like Doom then. Yeah, I don't know if you ever played Doom, but Doom was just horror. You had monsters attacking every turn, and you just basically had to just blow their faces off to survive and get through
yeah,
each level.
I played a little bit of the new Doom. It's similar to that, but a good deal different. They're horror in a lot of ways, but there's also a lot of psychological stuff. Like imagine if you took a zombie flick, but then you like crammed it into The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
So it has elements of both. Some of the voice acting in it. It creates the element so great. So it's like it's truly like creepy and disturbing sometimes. The story's really good in it. Like there's a bigger story to it. It's not just like here's an excuse to go experience all these horrible things. In the game, it's like this underwater city that was created by somebody to be like a perfect place, kind of like getting away from the world. It's very like Randian. A lot of kind of philosophy and that type of stuff in the game. Like it's crazy. There's a lot to it. You should probably just like look at Wikipedia and read a synopsis of it. There's so many elements that make it so great because it's not just surface level stuff. There's a lot of depth to it. The first game is great. The second one like really does take some big leaps from the gameplay of the first one and is pretty impressive. When I played them years ago, they were originally well, system wise, they were originally released for me on PlayStation 3. Then they have this collection that releases them on PlayStation 4. I played the first two, BioShock and BioShock 2. Then there's BioShock Infinite that my PlayStation 3 crapped out before it was released. The hard drive died and I didn't want to deal with it. We'd had my son by then, so I didn't have enough time to play video games. And I never got to play it, and I always really wanted to. So this has that also, and I haven't gotten to it yet. But BioShock 1 and 2, I don't know why, but for some reason when I bought them, they were getting dirt cheap. Like BioShock 1, I think I bought for like $8, and 2 for $12 used at GameStop. Since then, they've gone up in price because I think maybe it was with BioShock Infinite coming out, people were going back and revisiting, and it was starting to sell more again. So I was very glad that they did this collection. Even though I paid full price for it, and I could have just waited and got it for like $20 or $30 if I was patient, I don't really regret it because I really do love these games. You play your character is what's called a Big Daddy, and the Big Daddy is this like monstrous Hulk in like a suit of body armor type of deal. You're a person in there, but and you're protecting the little sisters, which are little girls who have been everything's been like genetically manipulated. So they've been manipulated, and they're collecting like genetic material from dead bodies essentially. And so
in the first game, you're somebody that crashes into the ocean, stumbles upon this world, and then you're trying to help somebody free him and his family, and in turn getting yourself free. Turns out it was all just like a big bunch of manipulation, basically. Yeah. So, and you go into this Big Daddy suit and play through it in the game to be able to survive. In the second one, you start off as a Big Daddy. You know, both games, there's a lot more story to it than that, but I absolutely love these games. So I'm very excited to get to Infinite, which is totally different. As far as it's not taking place in Rapture, which is this underwater city. It's taking place in like a city in the sky. I couldn't tell you a lot more about it now because it's been forever since I read up on it before it was released. But man, I am dying to play it. So that's my next thing I wanted to share. I love BioShock. BioShock 2. I'm playing through BioShock 2 right now. I'm also playing through it on easy, which, let me tell you, not a really big challenge. And let me tell you, I'm enjoying the hell out of it. It's kind of nice not having to be a big challenge. Like, I just want to play the damn game and play through the story and enjoy it. I don't need it to be difficult.
Well, three things. One, sometimes it's kind of fun first time you experience something like that just to go through it, just for the fun of it. And then if you want to challenge yourself, you just kind of increase the hardship of it because it makes it new each time because, oh, God, it's a lot harder this time. You know, they're throwing this at me in different things. The second thing is the level of detail and intricacy in the story and the way you described it means, I mean, they put a lot of thought into it, sounds like.
Yeah.
And the third thing is one of the first things when you're describing how you start out and you keep increasing, and most games are like this, I guess, nowadays. But I remember reading an article from my D&D buddies out there that love that. I remember reading an article about how influential Dungeons & Dragons and other RPGs were to video games because the whole leveling up and getting better, it all started with the role-playing tabletop games. And then guys that started programming, a lot of them were guys that had experience with that, and they just kind of incorporated that. I remember playing a lot of my early video games. That's what it was. You kept upping your level of armor, and I guess that would have been a natural anyhow, but, you know, D&D came first, and it kind of put it in people's heads, you know, leveling up. You get a lot better health, all that kind of stuff. It all kind of ties it together in a way. Yeah, that sounds really cool. BioShock.
Yeah, they have pop vinyls. I almost bought them before, and I really wish I did now because I didn't buy them because I wasn't getting pop vinyls. So let's go through a little pop vinyl tangent here, okay? So we're having a very tangent-based episode. So the first pop vinyl that I bought was a pop vinyl of – what the heck was it? I think it was K-9 from Doctor Who, and I bought it for my wife.
Oh, yeah.
And my son stole it. He decided it was his, so we gave it to him. Then I got a Swamp Thing pop vinyl for myself that I really liked. He co-opted that one. So I got my wife a Cheshire Cat one. He took that one. Turned out he was pretty obsessed with pop vinyls for quite a while. This was also the time he was quite young. We knew that there was stuff going on. We thought he might be autistic. A lot going on. But he just was obsessed with pop vinyls. I mean, we got to the point where whenever we could find any pop vinyl on clearance for like $5, it didn't matter what it was, we'd get it because he would just love the hell out of it. So that was pop vinyls. Like, we, you know, he had a ton of pop vinyls. Over time, we started weeding out some of the ones that wouldn't be ones he really cared about. Now it's like he still gets somewhat excited to see them, but like he doesn't ask to buy them anymore, even of things that he likes. So he's kind of gotten past that. So I was just always like, yeah, I'm not going to get any pop vinyls. I kind of was going to dip my toes in it, and then that just killed it, you know? Because I thought, like, if I ever get one, I'm going to have to – if I'm going to want one for myself, I'd have to get the same one for him. So then they come out with a Hellboy pop vinyl. I'm like, okay, I actually want this because what? Hellboy looks good as a pop vinyl. So I actually asked my comic shop to order me two because I'm like, I'm going to have to give him one. And he orders them. They don't come in forever. Finally, I sent him a message. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to the mall because the mall's like an hour away from me, and I don't usually go down that way. So I'm like, I'm going to go. Do you think you're going to get these things in or not? He says, you know what? If I haven't gotten them by now, they're probably never coming, so just go for it. You're off the hook.
So I go and I actually, like, I looked everywhere in the mall and I found one Hellboy pop vinyl. Like, specifically Hellboy, not just of, like, the Hellboy line. So I got it. And then, like, a week later, he actually got them in at the comic shop and I felt kind of bad, but I was like, eh, tough. you let me off the hook. So I got that one. That kind of opened the door. The next one I got was, we went to the Toys R Us up in Bangor, which is like an hour and a half-ish north of us, that was closing. It was closing before all the other ones were. And I got a Shinsuke Nakamura pop vinyl. He's a professional wrestler for WWE. He's a Japanese wrestler, and he's awesome. And it turns out that I guess this one that I got was actually a convention exclusive one. So just stumbling across it like that was pretty random, and I got it for cheap. And I liked it. It's unique. Like, his style works, you know, for being a pop vinyl. Since then, I've gotten a couple more. I got a Storm pop vinyl because I got it for like $2. And I like Storm. Storm's one of my favorite X-Men. I got, because I had the Hellboy one, I ended up grabbing an Ape Sapien one time. I got a Lobster Johnson one for $5, like in the Hellboy line. You know, that's kind of where I'm at. So now I've gotten a few. I'm like, man, I go back, I'm like, I really wish I got that Big Daddy pop vinyl. So that's the whole tangent. I've dabbled a little, like, I'm never going to get crazy into pop vinyls, but sometimes you go back, like, I wish I would have got this, but at the time, like, you wouldn't have really wanted it, you know?
Isn't it crazy? Because I have similar tendencies. Once, you know, I'll put something off, and then when I get into it, I go in and start getting more the obsession of something. I have to tame myself down off of it. You gotta, like, say, no, this is enough is enough. I don't really need more of this. You know, like, I used to get the Loot Crate, which is, and it's a pretty good deal. For $20, you get a shirt, you get different figures, you get all kinds of cool nerdy culture, kind of pop culture things. And finally, it's got to be like, how often is it that I actually love everything, or even like one thing in it? I had to stop myself from it because I was always hoping that the next box would be something that was just amazing. You know, I mean, one time it was a Valiant comic book. I mean, the first box I ever got had a D&D t-shirt. You know, it's, but you know, finally I had to stop it because I kept getting boxes. I'm like, God, what am I going to do with all this stuff? Because, you know, you get 6 to 8 things per box. And I didn't really need all of it, so I'm about to send you, I'm about to send Sammy or you some figures I got, Wolverine and stuff like that, that I got when I had my Loot Craze phase, my Loot Crate phase, yeah.
Well, I love me some Wolverine, so that'll go appreciated. It's funny, we actually, a friend of mine that, you know, I met from all this podcasting or whatever, she does Loot Crate. She had all this random stuff that had built up that she didn't want. Like, I think she gets more out of it than, like, what you're saying. And I know, like, I'd get even less out of it than you would. That's why I just stay away from those things. But so she had posted, like, if anybody wants this stuff, give me money for shipping, and I'll send it to you. So I was like, I would like this thing and this thing. And then after a while, like, her and I were just messaging, and she still had all this stuff left, and she's just like, do you want it all? I was like, I'll find a good home for all of it. Like, you know, Samuel likes some of it. Like, I, you know, my wife and I would like a couple things. Like, the coolest thing, my wife straight up jacked, and that was a Planet Express ship model from, you know, Futurama. She stole that right off, and that was my favorite thing out of anything that we got. But, you know, Mama likes it.
Hey, I think I have one of those. I'll send that to you too.
But yeah, so we got this big box of stuff, and Sammy played with some. Like, you know, we each took a couple things, and then I gave the rest to other people. And yeah, it's like, you know, it just goes to show. You know, the thing with me with something like that too is, like, $20 a month, you're hoping to get something awesome. How many months do you go without getting something awesome? Like 3 months. That's $60 you could have bought something really awesome with.
I will not even tell you how many T-shirts are in my closet that I really don't know much about. That is because every month you get a T-shirt, but I mean, it's all cool stuff. I mean, it kind of opened my eyes to some other things I didn't know about. But yeah, the cool thing is, though, there are specialized boxes. Like, if you're a huge Marvel fan, I think there's a Marvel box that's everything will be themed to that. I think there's like a Star Wars box if you're interested in that kind of thing, you can get a box that's like devoted to Star Wars. I think there, that seems to me a better investment of your money if it's something that you absolutely love. And, you know, you've spent $20 and you're getting a value of, I think they say 60 to 80 bucks per box, the material value of the things. I mean, like, I've got an awesome Batman keychain. Awesome keychain that I love. I value that. If I'd gone out and bought that, it probably would have cost me 5 to 10 bucks. So that's like a quarter to half the box itself. But I didn't get that value out of every single box I got. Sometimes I got more than that. I got a couple of really cool books. Actually, hardbound books they sent me. Three hardbound books they sent me. One was a Star Wars theme book, and two were about, one was about legendary superheroes, and another one was about legendary villains, or something like that, that were really good quality that they went back to, like, the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and brought up, they, like, each character had a two-page spread about them, and you did not, people you, the characters you never heard about, so it's fun stuff like that. But yeah, you never know what you're gonna get when you get jump into something like that. So yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, it's just like getting the Walmart comics that we were just talking about. Like, they can be good stuff, but I mean, how many are you gonna get that you love? And it's like, that money adds up, and you could have got something you'd like a lot better.
True. Yeah, I mean, the Batman was great, but then it had a Harley Quinn one at the end. I'm like, nope, I'm not interested in that. And the next month, I don't want to read another one, so I'm losing value because I'm not interested in that particular character. And I know she's a big deal, especially in the MCU, or not MCU, my bad, the DC Universe movies and stuff. She's a character they use a lot, but nah, lost interest with that one.
So what's your movie?
My movie's actually a TV show that you'd brought up. It's tied into a movie. I'm going to throw two together. And I briefly talked about this on 2BT on Sunday, but didn't get deep. You brought up the fact that y'all had watched The Crown. And that's something that interested my wife and oldest daughter for a long time. And we, like, binge-watched over the course of the 2 to 3 weeks, you know, limited time. And, you know, I really liked the show. Loved it, but I really didn't like most of the characters in the show, particularly Prince Philip. I really hope the people that handled the royal family did not let any of the footage get to them, because they make him look out to be, I don't know what word I can use. A really selfish.
They actually quite enjoy watching it, by the way.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
Wow. I don't know what that makes me think of them. Either that means it's really accurate and they don't care, or it's completely fantastic and they're getting enjoyment out of it. It's what I gather out of that statement.
Yeah, I know. I'd have to ask my wife again, because she was the one that was looking all up. Like, I really enjoyed the show, especially the first season. The second season, my wife ended up leaving me in the dust with it. You know, one of those things where if I want to do something that I wanted to do,
yeah,
I just have to, like, fine, go ahead and watch the show that's supposed to be the one that we watch together. Because we're very much the type that we tend to watch one thing at a time to completion, rather than having a variety of things to watch. So I was like, just fine. Just go ahead. Just do it. It was a great show, but she was always telling me a lot of different stuff about it. And she had more interest and knowledge of, you know, the royal family and the history in that line.
I enjoyed the heck out of it. We all did. And it kept growing, because they cover a pretty wide span of time in just two seasons. But I don't know how far you got in the second season, if you did at all. But the sixth episode, I think it was, where they go back into the Prince Philip's past, dealing with his Nazi ties with his family, that one blew me away. I'm like, this is something I've never heard about. So I did some reading on it, and it's still questionable. You know, maybe things weren't as cut and dry as, the king that abdicated, Edward, his part of that episode is still questionable historically, but they made it out to seem like he was definitely had a role to play where the Germans were going to like put him back in power if they took over Great Britain and things like that. I loved it. But my second thing is, we've brought this up before. Have you seen the movie The Darkest Hour yet? Mm-hmm. With Gary Oldman?
Yep.
What did you think of that?
Oh, I loved that movie.
He's so good. John Lithgow was amazing.
Yeah, it was very strange seeing two very different Churchill portrayals by two great actors, both excellent portrayals. And I guess it wasn't so much like, it wasn't a huge difference in portrayal as far as like the character of, of who they were portraying, but of like the mannerisms and the sound and some stuff like that. You know?
Well, Darkest Hour took you closer to Churchill, I think. You know, I mean, mostly you saw Churchill, John Lithgow, in the presence of Queen Elizabeth for the most part. I mean, you saw him doing other things, but it took it even closer to him. And, you know, Gary Oldman, you know, Churchill wasn't a tall man, and John Lithgow was pretty tall. So that was a thing that he had to overcome, I guess, in the portrayal, and he was great. But God, Gary Oldman was so amazing in that role. And anybody that hasn't seen that needs to check it out. If you have an interest in history at all, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, have you seen, tangent with Gary Oldman there, have you seen The Professional?
Yes. Love that movie.
Fantastic movie. So it's a movie that I had always loved. I hadn't watched it in years and years, and recently I watched it again. And man, he's so good in that movie. The character that he plays and the way that he plays him, the ability to make you hate somebody so much without just showing something completely like so heinous that you can't help but hate him. So another tangent off of that. 13 Assassins is a samurai movie that's a modern one.
Yeah.
That at least it was available on Netflix when I watched it. And I had trouble getting through the beginning of that movie because they show such heinous stuff to make you hate the villain of the movie, mm-hmm. that it was almost too much. I almost like, I don't want to watch this. But then once it got past establishing that, it didn't have to go back to that stuff because you hated him. Well, Gary Oldman and the character he played in The Professional, obviously there was some heinous stuff that went there, but it wasn't, killing a kid is horrible. There's a difference between knowing that that's horrible and some of the horrible stuff that was shown to you in 13 Assassins, you know? So without having to, like, be gratuitous to make you hate him, man, he made you hate him, didn't he?
He's so, he owned that, you know, every scene he was in. It makes me really respect his ability to pull that off because, you know, doesn't he put his headphones in, his earplugs in or headphones on and he's listening to music or something, or am I mixing that up with something else?
Right.
Yeah, and it's just like, and he pops his pill and, what every scene he was in, it was captivating. He's just a great actor is all it is to it. I mean, there's so many. I mean, he was in Dracula or Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. I remember that. He was great in that. Rewatched that not that long ago, and it's kind of dated, in my opinion. It kind of doesn't hold up well over time. But other than that, you know, he's been in lots of good movies. I mean, he was in a movie, what's the name of it? I can't recall now. He played this dreadlock drug dealer.
True Romance.
True Romance. Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. That movie, Christian Slater.
I need to rewatch that one because I watched it because I liked it, and honestly, like the reason I first watched it is I know that it had some. Yeah, it was written by Quentin Tarantino. That's why I watched it in the first place. But I haven't seen it in forever.
Brad Pitt's in it.
Yeah, I remember. Gary Oldman's character is what I remember the best about it too.
Yeah, he was great. He was great in Christian Slater. The big one of the best parts of the movie is when Christian Slater walks in there to pretty much, well, he goes in saying he's buying his girlfriend's freedom, and he offers him nothing. And he pulls a gun and shoots the guys. It's a great spoilers, people. Sorry, it's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
There's a ton of very famous people in this too: Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, Christopher Walken, even Bronson Pinchot from.
Yeah, he's the assistant to the big time movie producer they're selling drugs.
Or the show.
He does great.
The show that he did that was on. Oh man, it's gonna drive me crazy now. Perfect Strangers. Samuel Jackson, Michael Rapaport, James Gandolfini. Man, there's so many super famous people in there.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman is the one that I specifically remember. Like, out of all of them, Gary Oldman is the one that stands out the most, not having watched his career.
Gandolfini's scene with Patricia Arquette is pretty epic, too, though, where he's like, he's not being mean to her. He's like, look, this is what I'm going to do. You're going to die. And like, and the way she takes him out, I don't know if you're...
No, that's what I'm saying. It's been so long since I've watched this, and this is just what I'm saying is a good example of like how great Gary Oldman was. The only thing I specifically remember is his character in it. And I remember a scene where I think it's he's interacting with Christian Slater, and Christian Slater just like staring at him, and he says, I know I'm pretty, but I'm not as pretty as a pair of breastises, because yeah, there's like porn on the TV or something. Like, that's what I specifically remember. None of these other characters like stand out as much, and they're a bunch of great actors. That's how good Gary Oldman is.
That's how good he is, and he's the same guy that was, in my head, he's forever ingrained as what Winston Churchill is. That's how that's how talented the son of a gun is. Wow. Okay, Gary Oldman goes into Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World Hall of Fame, along with Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire. We just officially, that's
all right,
it.
We're starting our Hall of Fame. You need to write this down. We got to start keeping track of this. Matt Kent, Jeff Lemire,
yep.
Gary Oldman. I think we should also throw Brother Ali in there as the first musical introduction, because we have talked about him a lot.
Nope, I agree with you. I'm writing it down right now. I'm actually doing this, people. We'll start a Hall of Fame.
I guess we need to start our own webpage for the show. We got to give people a way to access us.
I think we should. I think we should.
That's what we need to do.
I'm going to look into that.
All right.
I'm going to look into that. I've been looking into some other stuff like that. Okay, so that's my... And I also suggest watching Dunkirk, because it ties into the events that happen. They talk a lot about what happened at Dunkirk in The Darkest Hour, but this movie shows you what happens. They came out about the same time, so... there's no action in Darkest Hour. You get all your action and violence and excitement from Dunkirk. So you got a music recommendation, Paul?
Yeah, probably do. So this actually comes from my interview with Rafer Roberts, because before we actually did the interview, I was messaging with him a little bit while waiting for my family to settle down, go to bed, and all that. I was just asking him some other random questions, because like, I knew we'd talk about his books, but then, you know, I wanted a little bit more familiarity with just his other interests. So that way, if, you know, the conversation drifted around, I'd be a little bit prepared for, you know, possible connections. And one thing I just asked what his interests were, and he said a few things, and I asked him about music. He listed a bunch of things, and the one that stood out the most to me, so there's a couple of things that he listed that I've listened to pretty heavily, at least a number of years ago, also known as before I discovered hip-hop. They Might Be Giants stood out to me the most. And They Might Be Giants, I still appreciate They Might Be Giants. And this goes back to when I was a young kid watching Tiny Toons Adventures. Did you ever watch Tiny Toons Adventures?
I don't think so.
So Tiny Toons Adventures was a cartoon that was like the kids' version of the Looney Tunes. I don't think that they were like literally, it wasn't like Bugs Bunny had kids and here's his kids, but it's like the kid versions of Bugs Bunny, right? So there's Babs Bunny and Buster Bunny were the two bunnies.
Instead of the Tasmanian devil, there was Dizzy Devil. Instead of Daffy Duck, there was Plucky Duck, and so on and so forth. They had two songs, two episodes, yeah, I think it was two different episodes that had songs in them, and they would do these like cartoon videos that went along with the songs. They Might Be Giants songs, these two. And I'm sure they did it with a bunch of other stuff too, but these are the things that still, after all these years, have stuck with me so strongly. And I'm actually going to stall and talk slowly for a minute while I. There we go. So they come from the They Might Be Giant album, They Might Be Giants album called Flood. There is the song Istanbul and the song
Yeah,
Particle Man. So these are both songs that are at least in the ballpark of educational, right? Like Istanbul is a whole
you can
song.
throw it. It's in the parking lot, if not the park
Yeah.
itself.
It's like a little bit mature of the equivalent of like a kid's song about pooping, to encourage you to poop. So they had a cartoon that went along with both of these songs. And Istanbul, it's not Constantinople. That one was all like, camels and I don't remember exactly, but that one was kind of more like a story. I'd have to watch it again, but I think like somebody was stealing something and trying to get away. And Particle Man was people wrestling, and they were these different. There's Triangle Man, there was Particle Man, there was so on and so forth. But I remember those. It's always stuck with me, and I was a little kid then. And I get older, and I kind of rediscover They Might Be Giants. And I would say Flood is probably still the album that I like the best overall. But when I was in high school, a friend of mine, this is back, before CDs were prevalent and mixtapes were actually a thing. And anybody who experienced the days of mixtapes will tell you how great mixtapes are because you can't skip around. It's not easy to put together. You're putting some effort into those suckers. You're trying to plan stuff out to make it good because you're working your ass off to fill that 90-minute tape, 60-minute tape, whatever length of tape was. You got two sides to fill. And then you spend all this time working on writing down every band and every song, basically making liner notes for it. Man, there is some love in making mixtapes for people. So a friend of mine in high school, whole nother story here, girl that absolutely hated me. For no reason, I have no idea why. But then one day we were in class, I asked if I could borrow a pencil. And one thing I've learned, and I heard this somewhere from somebody, is that you can't do something for somebody and hate them. Like you can't reconcile those two things. So you can't do a favor for somebody but resent them. And like there's something that has to break that down. So like I still honestly believe after all these years that just asking for a pencil started breaking down this like stupid high school I don't like you shit. You got some editing to do in this episode. broke down this stupid high school stuff. Sorry, I said it again, so you can just cut that whole part out. And allowed us to actually start getting to know each other and being friends. But she made me a mixtape with a whole bunch of like, punk and ska and stuff like that. But she had a song from They Might Be Giants album, John Henry. It is called I Should Be Allowed to Think. And it is a song that is based off of. Okay, here we go. The opening lines are taken from the beginning of Howl by Allen Ginsberg, a controversial poem from the 1950s. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical. That's where it stops, so They Might Be Giants, then goes on naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix, and so on. So that opening line, I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, that's what starts out this song. And, as much as it could be easy to kind of make fun of They Might Be Giants, like I remember when I was, this age when I kind of got back into them, it was like into high school, maybe a little bit post high school. And I remember talking with a friend being like, oh, we should start a tribute band. And we're like, oh, who should we start a tribute band for? And I said, They Might Be Giants. And so he just made like joke, aren't they like a tribute band to themselves? It's like, they have this quality to them that like sounds not legitimate in a way, but like a lot of the stuff that they've done has been very very clever, and like it can be easy to kind of cast it off, but then you look at some of the stuff that they've done musically and there's really a lot going on there. I think this song is one of the best examples of this, where this song fits, like, I listening to it, I didn't even know it was They Might Be Giants, because it fits like seamlessly in with a tape full of like, you know, punk and ska and stuff like that, you know, edgier stuff. Not that ska's that edgy, but, you know, punk at least.
Well, the fact they quoted that particular poem, the first line or so of it, makes me want to, I don't know if I've ever heard that song, but I definitely want to check it out just because of that. Yeah, that's pretty, and that leads into, I don't know, can I go ahead and cut in with my
song? A couple more
song
facts before we transfer over to that. They also the theme song for Malcolm in the Middle, which is, you know, quite popular for a number of years.
That's right, yes.
Bryan Cranston,
okay.
Of course, was the dad on that show and was the best part of the show and went on to do many other great things. So he's still, as far as the show is concerned, he is the reason that that show is worth watching, in my opinion. But yeah, they did the theme song to that. But then I actually discovered this recently when I was looking up their music on Spotify, because two of their top five songs, they did the theme song to Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, and then every episode of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse ended with the song Hot Dog. That was also them.
Hot Dog, Hot Dog, Hot Diggity Dog.
All right, on to...
Yep. That's pretty awesome. You mentioned to me last night that you were thinking about They Might Be Giants based on your conversation or messaging with Rafer, and for some reason, instantly in my head popped the Flaming Lips, because, and you just mentioned something about it, your friend said, well, they sound like a cover band of themselves or something like that. Flaming Lips is kind of the same thing. Though they're two bands that do not care what you think about them. They're going to put out the music they want to make, and they're just going to enjoy themselves, you know? And another weird thing I found when I was like, okay, why in particular this stick in my head? Because I remember, I'm a lot older than you, Paul, if you don't know. My birthday's next week on Monday. I'm old, but I actually remember Istanbul being played on the radio, and it was a big hit, pretty much. I mean, so far that it was played a lot. And but both bands started in the early 80s. They Might Be Giants started in 82. Flaming Lips started in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma in 83, while the lead singer, Wayne Cohen, was working at Long John Silver's, which he continued to do until 1990. I don't think he has to work there anymore. I think he's done well for himself. But they both have there's a sense of humor to the music. I mean, who sings a song about Istanbul? Somebody that wants to sing a song about Istanbul. They enjoy it, they do it, and either it sticks to the wall or it doesn't. And, you know, they might Flaming Lips was the same way, but the one album, and I as soon as you brought that up, I was playing it for my wife and oldest daughter last night. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Flaming Lips. I'm not. I remember there's a song called Jelly or Don't Use Jelly that was an early hit for them. Not their best song, but it's a catchy tune. But there's an album that came out in 2002, and I actually went out and bought this one. It's called Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots. And, God, I was re-listening to it today, and I was playing it while driving home from school with my oldest daughter. I forgot how much I loved that album. The highlight, I mean, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots Part 1, because there's two parts to the song. The second part is, I don't recommend it as much as I do the first, because the second part's kind of more experimental. But the purity of that first, the Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, she's a black belt, she's going to fight and save us from the robots, and just the story he tells is just so nice. But the one song that stands out on the entire album is Do You Realize? And I did a little reading, and I found out he wrote that song at a time where when they were recording, and one of his friends and band members was going through withdrawals, and crying between every take they took because he was having such a hard time of it. And he's also battling with the fact that his dad has either died or was dying. And he just wrote this beautiful, beautiful song, Do You Realize? And it's kind of just says, this makes this statement about how terrifying the world can be, but how beautiful it is at the same time, because it's a beautiful song. And I've listened to it like six times since last night when you brought up They Might Be Giants. And, you know, that's it's a song that it sticks with you. So, yeah, the Flaming Lips, they Might Be Giants, came from the same era. I guess they didn't all work at Long John Silver's, but that kind of makes me like him a little bit more because, I mean, it's bad for you, but come on, who doesn't like a little bit of Long John Silver's, even though it might kill you? And so, yeah, that's my music suggestion, because you helped me by bringing up that band, and I forgot about the Malcolm in the Middle thing, but that completely makes sense to me. That helped me kind of... To help me remember something I really love is that album, because I do remember buying that after hearing some songs, and there's a lot of good songs on that album. So that's my piece on
my
that.
My wife actually listened to the Flaming Lips, and the album that you were just talking about is the one I've listened to more than any other. I haven't listened to it a ton, but I've listened to it enough that, like, everything you're talking about, I remembered. Yeah, it's one of those things that I can look at that and see the artistry in it, but especially, I mean, that was like around, a little bit after I started getting into hip-hop and underground hip-hop, so I listen to a lot of experimental and avant-garde stuff, but leaning a lot more to the hip-hop side than to the rock side. Like, you get experimental rock and it's getting too lost in guitars and stuff, and I've definitely found, like, I think guitars are a lot more boring than beats, but yeah, that, yeah. You know, it's They Might Be Giants, The Flaming Lips. There's something about their quality that at the same time that I was kind of dabbling and getting back into They Might Be Giants, I guess you'd say, was when somebody introduced me to Tom Waits. And there's something about Tom Waits' music, like lyrically and stuff, like far above and beyond, you know, They Might Be Giants or anything. But the willingness to create what he wanted to create without worrying about what people thought about it and without, you know, like just doing what he wanted to do. You look at the credits in, you know, for his songs and some of the things that they played. The first Tom Waits CD I ever heard was Beautiful Maladies, which is a collection of his stuff from Island Records. And
oh yeah,
there's credits of somebody playing a chair, like stuff like that all over yeah. that. Like, you know, they do weird stuff and they're like, it's what they want to do to make what they want to make. And I think there's really something to be said for that.
And yeah, I love people that will take chances, and they definitely did. And they were, you know, listening back to songs that were written a long time ago, they were kind of like on the edge, maybe a little ahead of time musically of some of the things they were doing creatively. But come on, they've got a song, and I listened to it last night, and it might have been one of the favorite songs I listened to last night. The song is called There Should Be Unicorns. And come on. Who doesn't love a unicorn song?
Since we're on tangents this episode, and this goes along with all this, the Aquabats. Have you ever listened to Aquabats?
Yep, I saw them on Yo Gabba Gabba.
I saw them live once in my little hometown of Lancaster, California. Yeah, I listened to them for a while. I think that there's something about They Might Be Giants, Flaming Lips, the Aquabats. They're all producing a different quality or a different style of stuff. But they're all doing very much something that is avant-garde, but easy to overlook as being avant-garde because they're doing what they want to do
yeah.
in genres or you know, with songs that seem very simplistic. But then you look at the overall picture of what they're doing. I mean, the Aquabats yeah. are like a giant performance piece. You see them perform live, especially, and like I'll never forget the live show. It was and just like it was crazy seeing a anybody known at all where I grew up playing. I also saw a couple really good punk bands there that surprised the hell out of me that they played there too. But seeing the Aquabats was something else. Like they had segments of like luchadors coming on stage and fighting them, and it was crazy stuff. Yeah,
freaking
really?
Fantastic. But
I'm not really familiar with. I'm gonna have to check them out then, based on that, because I mentioned Yo Gabba Gabba. There was this kids show that we play for our youngest daughter, because every episode engages her, and not much does because she's blind. It's a lot of auditory greatness in it, and they have like popular bands, and some of the bands they don't name, but I remember seeing the guitarist for the Aquabats on that, so I'm familiar with it because of that. And he's pretty amazing, just in his little bit on that little 5-minute skit he was on.
Yeah, I'll give you an album suggestion. I'll look up later, but when you listen to Aquabats, like, keep in mind they went on to basically develop themselves into a kid show. So they had an Aquabats show that I think you can watch on Netflix or something like that. They were just a band. They were a ska band. So when you listen to their music, like, remember, like, they went on to do this other stuff. They were just a ska band. They weren't a kid show that spun off into a band. Like, they were a ska band that spun off into a kid show. So it's kind of crazy. Okay. I actually kind of want to look into them a little bit more, because it's been so long. Like, when I stopped listening to them, they were just a ska band. And then, like, years later, I'm like, oh, let's look into the Aquabats. What the hell is this show, you know? I'm going to give you a little bit of musical homework, too. I haven't listened to this in forever, but I just found it on Spotify. But talking about all these really kind of experimental, different bands and stuff. The band is called The Music Tapes, and the album is called First Imaginary Symphony for Nomad. So check it out. I haven't listened to this in a very long time, but I remember finding it very interesting when I did. So I just downloaded it on my phone. So perhaps that's something that we'll endeavor to discuss further in a future episode.
Well, that sounds really cool. I'll look into that. Remind me. Send me a message later and help me remember the name. I tried to write it down here. Interesting. Interesting tangents tonight.
It's been a very tangential night. We're about done. I believe you had something else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, not to get personal, but I mean, we jokingly named this show Paul. And actually, I really didn't think you'd like the name, because you messaged me saying, hey, let's do a show together. If you're going to do a show with somebody, let's do a show together. I'm like, okay, let's do it. I'm like, jokingly type, Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World, without giving much thought to it. But having said that, I think sometimes sharing things can help people. And let's just say, without getting too personal, this last week has been really hard for me and my family. We've had a lot of stuff going on. Ended up me learning that going to the emergency room and spending 36 hours with 30 minutes sleep doesn't kill you. So that's positive, right? But seriously, in the last couple of weeks, it's almost like since we last talked, I was kind of preparing myself for something that was going to happen I didn't know was going to happen. And we had a medical emergency in my family over the weekend, before we recorded this, of course. And, the last time we talked, I brought up Ben Nichols talking about how, he was never scared until he had a kid and got married, had a kid, had a family. You know, and since then, I've been listening to lots of different interviews. I kind of went down I started listening to for some reason, Ben Rogan podcast, shows that he's done with interesting people that I respected, and every one of them almost said the exact same thing. They were never scared until they had a family. They were never scared until they had a kid. And, I grew up with a bunch of guys that were like, I'm not scared of nothing. Nothing scares me. But, I've the last week or so, I've had a lot of worry, a lot of depression, a lot of sadness, a lot of hope. Same time, I've been a lot of fear, but at the same time, I was able to deal with it because I was able to focus on the things that I love, my family, for number one, and number two, I'm not saying I want to distract myself, but I was able to look at things to keep myself preoccupied during the times of stress and worry. like I told you last night, I went back and reread a lot of the Valiant since 2012, Eternal Warrior books, because those were some of my favorite. He's my favorite character. I was reading some of that stuff. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being scared. It's how you handle it. And you know what? My family is fine. We're happy. We're good. And part of that is because we do have a lot of care for one another. And, you know, we dealt with the problem that existed and faced it. And it reminded me of two things. One, to be afraid is not a bad thing, because the poet Rainer Maria Rilke wrote something to the effect that our fears are like dragons guarding our most precious treasures. But that stood out to me. And the other thing is, I was listening to Joe Rogan, and I don't particularly like listening to him, but I think a lot of the people I listened to him talking to, the people he was talking to, were interesting people. And he played this thing, and I'm not familiar with the guy at all. And I'm going to put it on the end of the show, I think, because he played it on his show. It's the Jocko podcast, J-O-C-K-O. It's Jocko Willink. He was a Navy SEAL. He earned the Silver and Bronze Star in Iraq. And he has just type in J-O-C-K-O space good and listen to what he says. And that, you know, a lot of advice you get is cliche, and kind of some of what he says could be considered cliche. It's like, I'll let you listen to it and get what you get out of it, but it's true. I mean, we dealt with some stuff and we're good. We face it, we have each other, and you know, you gotta be able to. No one ever said life's easy, but it's how you handle things and appreciate the things that really matter. My wife was talking earlier tonight about some news stuff, and it's like, you know, normally this would really upset me, but it doesn't bother me at all because the focus is on what really matters. So if we're ever going to go out and save the world, maybe not to be sappy or anything, but maybe, you know, if you're going through tough stuff, just keep your head up and face your fears, face the things that are troubling you, and just kind of get on with it. And remember to embrace the ones that you love. So that is how I'm going to bring the show down to the very end, Paul.
Yeah, you said a lot of good stuff there that I definitely agree with. You know, we got through a lot of trying times, and sometimes those really tough times help you keep everything really in perspective. Sometimes when you don't have any really big challenges, it can be easier to lose sight of what's really important. You get caught up with stuff that's not important, and that stuff can be more damaging. So, you know, it's thinking about what you were just saying. Of course, you shared with me what you went through, but, you know, thinking about some of the stuff you know, my family has dealt with in similar, you know, similar types of things. It does a lot, you know. It's tough things and it's hard, and it could leave you with you know, emotional baggage or scars to deal with. But really puts it in perspective when you get caught up in stupid day to day stuff and get twisted up about it. If you stop and think about that stuff, you know,
comics. After this last week I've had, Comics Gate doesn't mean much to me. I mean, I think the people, I'll just go out and say it, I think the people that are getting upset about stuff, they really need to take life a little bit more seriously than getting upset over stuff like that. So, I mean, perspective is a big deal, and I think some people need a reality knock upside the head every once in a while. So, there we go.
It. We've saved the world yet again.
We saved it. Good talk, Paul. Heck, long one, I think.
I think we went twice as long as we expected to here.
Well, yeah. We had a little bit of a break that no one's going to hear. And until we meet again, I guess, how do people reach us, Paul?
So I'm on Twitter at Who's Paul. The show is on Twitter at occasionally STW. Michael, where are you on Twitter?
I think You ask me this every time. My mind blanks every time. I believe it's at MD Sparkman.
That it is.
And also listen, also check out the 2BT show. And I had intended to mention the Rafer Roberts interview on it Sunday, and I forgot. So my apologies, but I'm sure everybody, most of the people that listen to that probably listen to us here. So.
Yeah, so go to nerdylegion.com to check out this podcast, 2BT, many other great Nerdy Legion podcasts, all our friends there. So check that out. I guess that pretty much sums up for today. Definitely check out Grumble by Rafer Roberts. You could also reach him on Twitter at Plastic Farm if you want to see what he's up to or let him know what you think about Grumble.
One more addition. You know, I've got comics. We were talking about how hard it is sometimes to find new things. I've got Comixology Unlimited, and it is daunting to go through the list of possibilities. So if anybody out there has recommendations, if you're a Comixology Unlimited subscriber and you have something that you recommend, if you want to send it to us through these avenues that Paul has mentioned here, please do, because I need some help. And if I like it a lot, I'll definitely talk about it on this show and share with other people. So please share recommendations about what to read, because Comixology Unlimited, when you start digging through all the different publishers, it's daunting, man.
There's a lot. When they first launched, I did a free trial, and it was okay. Like, there was some stuff that I wanted to read on there that I did, but I didn't re-up. The second time I signed up for, because I was able to do another free trial a ways down the road, was because they had the first chunk of Lone Wolf and Cub on there, and I wanted to get a bunch of that, but I was like, well, I might as well spend $6 and read all of this stuff and then purchase the stuff that comes after it. But then after I finished reading that Lone Wolf and Cub, I dabbled around in other stuff. There is a ton of stuff on there, and it keeps on expanding. So that's pretty great. You think that's bad? Try having Marvel Unlimited and trying to sort out what to read on there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
All right, man.
Well, let's call it a night. We've told you where to reach us. Until next time, if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to the Rafer Roberts interview. And if all goes well, next week I'm going to have an interview with J.K. Woodward to share with you guys.
Heck yeah.
Have a good night.
Have a good night. The end.
One of my direct subordinates, one of my guys that worked for me, he would call me up or pull me aside with some major problem, some issue that was going on, and he'd say, boss, we got this and that and the other thing, and I'd look at him and I'd say, good. And finally one day he was telling me about some issue that he was having, some problem, and he said, I already know what you're going to say. And I said, well, what am I going to say? He said, you're going to say good. He said, that's what you always say. When something is wrong and going bad, you always just look at me and say, good. And I said, well, yeah. When things are going bad, there's going to be some good that's going to come from it. Didn't get the new high-speed gear we wanted? Good. Didn't get promoted? Good. More time to get better. Oh, mission got canceled? Good. We can focus on another one. Didn't get funded. Didn't get the job you wanted. Got injured. Sprained my ankle. Got tapped out. Good. Got beat. Good. Learned. Unexpected problems. Good. We have the opportunity to figure out a solution. That's it. When things are going bad, don't get all bummed out. Don't get startled. Don't get frustrated. If you can say the word good, guess what? It means you're still alive. It means you're still breathing. And if you're still breathing, well, then now you still got some fight left in you. So get up, dust off, reload, recalibrate, re-engage. Go out on the attack.
wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.